Buddy, you're a boy.
Make a big noise playing in the street.
I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for another Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Jesse Mallon, longtime favorite of ours here in the Underground Garage. His brand new album, Sad and Beautiful World, is out now on Wicked Cool Records and features a recent coolest song in the world, Dance with a System. We'll hear some of that now, followed by my chat with Jesse on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I was lost at the Holocaust, so dance with the system like you're down on your back. Dance with the system like it's blown the tracks. Dance with the system in your rebel boots. Dance with the system like you're swinging the blues. Getting down, getting down and out. Mighty Manfred here. And joining me for today's Coolest Conversations is musician, songwriter, producer, entrepreneur, and longtime friend of the Underground Garage, Jesse Mallon, who I also want to point out has been our go-to substitute disc jockey for the channel, and in the past has hosted our quarterly interview program, Underground After Dark. How are you, Jesse?
I'm doing all right, not too bad. How about you, Manfred? You all right?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing all right. Trying to get back... you know, we have this kind of forward momentum going in life, and we had to put the brakes on things for a while and get my feet back on the ground like Fred Flintstone in those cars that they would use, you know.
Yeah.
Now, have you kept healthy all these past months? And also, just what is your pandemic story?
Well, we were in the middle of touring Sad and Beautiful World. No, we were in the middle of touring. It's early here. Sunset Kids. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that's not a Freudian slip. But we were out doing Sunset Kids, which is my last record on Wicked Cool. And we were in the middle of the UK. And it was one of my best tours. I mean, all the shows were selling out. We were getting some extra money for back-end money. And we were loving playing those songs and the old ones and the new ones. And things were just really kicking. And like everybody else, you know, we started to hear about this thing, this pandemic, and it wasn't really kicking so hard in the UK. Everyone was like, get back home. We played our last gig Friday, March 13th, 2020, and I was home on the 14th from London on the Saturday. By Tuesday, the whole city had been closed down. We thought it would just be for a couple weeks. And that was it for that period of that record and that cycle, which we had festivals like Glastonbury in the UK and all kinds of stuff planned for the whole year. And, you know, I could play the violin for everybody out there, but really everybody had something happen to them. This is the one thing, it's like a worldwide thing that, you know, everyone's got a story. I found myself at home alone. A record that was supposed to be finished on our little breaks didn't get to have the time to be made. We couldn't see each other. And I started doing a live stream from my bedroom, tried to make it like Mr. Rogers meets a punk rock backroom pit, kiddie show, you know, kind of a podcast, live stream. I don't know what. I took my iPhone, I put some gaffer tape on it, made a makeshift boom stand thing, and I filmed myself, which was very awkward at the beginning because, you know, there's no applause, there's no crowd. You're kind of singing to this device. But somehow you could feel that there were people out there. It's kind of like in that movie Wings of Desire with the angels. Peter Falk says, I can't see you, but I can feel you. And I did that. Eventually, the world opened up a little bit. We could get our toe in there. We started to do some from a club my friend owns called Berlin in the basement and do it with the band. And then we could sneak into the studio a little bit. So I was home I was single. I was in a place where, you know, I couldn't do anything. I've never been this locked in. And outside the window, there was, you know, a lot of stuff going on in the streets. New York was pretty intense. And we lost some really good people. And it just so on. I mean, everybody can probably relate in their own way to this story. But mine was, you know, I tried to take the lemons and make margaritas and write a record and work on these live streams shows. I was interviewing people, you know, too, because I didn't want it to just be about me. So I was talking to other artists and actors and filmmakers, musicians, to see like what they were going through and what they were doing. And that was a lot of it. In the end, came this record and came, you know, a year and a half of these live stream shows and selling mugs online to pay the bills. T-shirts.
Well, tell me some more about the live stream show. Has that ended now, or when was the last one that you did?
That ended when we could kind of play in front of live people, and you know, started out slowly with like partitions and mask only and plastic before the vaccine, like plexiglass separators and stuff at some of the venues. But we've been out. I mean, we've been playing. We played the Stone Pony last week for the See Here Now Festival, and we've been doing stuff. So with horror, you know, and all that stuff happening, and the new record, it was something that we figured we're going to go into the next phase. But I think there was a lot of optimism when the vaccine was first came available and so many people got it in New York. People were so stoked and like, yeah, we're okay, we're immune. And then it was like, well, there's this other variant. And so, but there was maybe a 6 week to a 2 month period where I think people felt a little more relaxed than they do now. And there was a little more like getting out there. I mean, for me, music is so much of a community, you know, rock and roll and just being out and being around people and connecting and playing live. You know, you make these records, but you want to play live, you know, to kind of learn more about the songs and see if they hold up.
You know, so we're talking about this coming out of the pandemic, and this is like from the artist's point of view, but you mentioned you also being an entrepreneur, and you're responsible for, involved with a couple of bars, live music venues there in New York City. How is all that faring? Are people coming back out?
Well, you know, when I got my first record deal with Degeneration in the 90s, this band I had, I just wanted to put back into the neighborhood. And we opened a club, me and some friends, Coney Island High, St. Mark's Place. I didn't know what I was doing. I went on tour. Everybody gave the shit away and let everybody in free. But people had fun. And it went on for 5 years. But we got closed for dancing by Mayor Giuliani. And I hated him then. I still hate him. But, you know, people liked him for a couple of minutes. Maybe people still do. I think he's pretty silly. But he came after laws that were based in the jazz era prohibition, based in racism, and enforced them, cabaret laws. And we couldn't get a cabaret license, so they closed down our club after several fines. But I had it in me to keep going, and I found some other pals that just wanted to, you know, have a clubhouse, like a Frank Sinatra fantasy. So up in Niagara, and it's on 7th Street. It's just a little bar. And we always wanted to treat the bands the way I like to be treated when I'm on the road. You know, go somewhere after a show, get some free drinks, listen to some good music. I think a lot of musicians, when they're not playing, they like to listen to music or talk about music or drink and talk and listen, you know, like whatever. It's like, it's a thing. So we did Niagara, and then Bowery Electric came about maybe 10 years later or something like that. And I was able to take some of the people that worked for me that didn't want to tour anymore, you know, road managers and people, and people that were my family, let them run these places while we were on the road. And so it became a thing. But, you know, the partners that I've had have been, you know, musician or musician friendly artists. So we care about, like, you know, having it be a cool place. But that versus the commerce and the expensive rents of the city.
Yeah,
really tough. So it was a balance of booking really cool stuff and then having like DJs that play, you know, really mainstream crap. But, you know, we kind of do a little of both, and it's been a struggle. We lost all the clubs, got closed down, you know, for a year and a half. And
right. So
I was really pushing with Save Our Stages and NEVA to try to get the government to understand that small independent venues on a national level need to be supported. They need to get help. They need funding, or they're not going to make it. They're not the Live Nation, AEG venues. You know, they're the little spots that, you know, apparently that's the places, the Petri dishes where artists, you know, like CBGB's was, or the Mercury Lounge, or in New York, where, you know, to grow and become the future, you know, Lady Gaga's or whatever, you know, Ramones. And so we fought and fought, and we were able to raise a lot of money through the Joe Strummer Foundation birthday show we did for Save Our Stages. And we had a lot of artists get together and do the music of Strummer and The Clash. And besides raising awareness, but also raising money. And not everybody got the funding. We didn't get it for all the spots, but a lot of places did. And it really helped places continue on. And so a couple of my spots didn't make it, and a couple did. Most of them did that I'm involved in. And, you know, we just have a lot of debt. But the summer opened up, and people really wanted to come out once, like I said, the vax was accessible. And the young kids seemed kind of fearless. So there was a feeling, and I don't know how it was in California, but in New York this summer, like, wow, like, we're just going to dance and have fun. And, you know, kids were having sex in the streets, and kids were, you know, doing whatever they're doing. Maybe it was a bit silly, but there was a spirit of, like, this recklessness that I hadn't seen. Maybe it wasn't my generation, but it was kind of a thing. And I think that's that was something. But now it's kind of turning again. So who knows? We live in these uncertain times, and, you know, the clubs were busy for a while, and everyone wanted to play, and now it's kind of getting quiet. A lot of groups are canceling tours, and just, you know, I don't think everybody's on the same page with the vaccine. I think, you know, it's one thing in the mainstream, left and right, and people, you know, the Democrat, Republican, it became politicized, but people in our community of, like, the artists and the underground, the musicians and people outside of mainstream are, I don't think everybody's on the same page. And that's it's a little different than what I'm used to, because usually at least our little circle kind of knows what they want to do. So the world's kind of in a very different spot, you know?
Well, let's talk some about the new album, Sad and Beautiful World. You mentioned being on Wicked Cool Records. Then this one is obviously. Now, I read that it's like a double disc CD. Is it also available as an LP?
Yeah, on vinyl. I mean, the great thing about Wicked Cool is they're, you know, always supportive of whatever kind of package you want, like gatefold, lyrics, you know, sleeves, colored vinyl, whatnot.
But is it a gatefold then? I mean, if it's double CD disc, it should be a gatefold, right?
Yeah, it is. So it's a double CD, and it's a double vinyl record, or if you get it digitally, you can listen to it and take a break and the other half. But more than the package, which I'm happy with, is just... yeah, the idea of one side is more of roots rock, and the other side is more of a rock and roll, louder Saturday night, you know, in the city kind
of. Right, and you label those as the roots rock. There's a roots rock side and radical side. That's your description.
Yeah, just like a play on the old reggae thing, roots rock radicals, man. But yeah, one is more Americana, whatever that means, or whatever, you know. It's so one's softer. I mean, I've always loved growing up as a kid. The ballads and the acoustic songs by Jim Croce, Neil Young, Elton John, and even when I got into punk rock, you know, the Johnny Thunders songs that were the ballads, or the Replacements songs that were mellow. Same thing with the Stones. You know, I liked both, like when they rocked or when they broke your heart and took it down to Wild Horses or whatever. So in our shows over the years, I would either tour acoustic or I'd go out with the band. And the last couple of years, somehow I was able to meld together both aspects of what I really like to do on my records and what I've done for years, where they used to be more separate, but just where you can have that real energy, physical stuff, and then the stuff that you bring down to a whisper.
Right, it's all dynamics.
Yeah, right? Well, when I was in bands, like I was in hardcore and punk bands and stuff when I was a kid, and nobody really listened to the lyrics as much as we put them on lyric sheets and all. So I thought when I made my first solo record, I really want people to hear the words, even, you know, whatever. I don't know, you know, just it's important to me, not just play for the mosh pit, you know. So I brought it down quieter, but over the years our records, my solo records, have kind of come around to having moments that are more electric and full tilt. And I think this is the first record where we've kind of acknowledged both sides of that part of what I do and had them in this concept. And it starts with Greener Pastures, which is kind of waking up in the morning and in some hotel in Texas and just trying to find a way to get your footing. And then it ends with going out to the world with St. Christopher on the second album and traveling and realizing that wherever you go, people are people, and everyone's dealing with a lot of the same shit, and you could try to run away from it, but, you know, you're searching these things and you realize, you know, we're all connected, which can be a beautiful thing if people looked at that and thought of it that way.
So how much you talk about the, you know, the first track, the last track, and just the journey through the two sides. How much of the album had you written, let's say, in the before times, and how much of this came about, the songs came about during the pandemic?
I would say probably 30, maybe about 40%, 45% was done before, and then the other half during the pandemic or whatever we want to call this horrible thing. But, you know, the plan was for it to come out October 2020. Okay. And we put the one out before that in 2019, Sunset Kid. So I was like, you know, when I was growing up, bands put a record out every year. Let's strike while the fire's hot, the iron's hot here. And, you know, the band was kind of cooking, but we just couldn't get in and finish the rest. So as time went on, I wrote a lot more, and it ended up becoming this double record. A couple songs were started during the Sunset Kid sessions with Lucinda Williams and Tom Overby producing. Backstabbers and the way we used to roll,
right?
And they just weren't ready for that record. It was different. They had a different sound. They felt like a different record, is what we all felt. So we finished them up during this record, which they seem to make more sense. Those two songs, "Living with Others," like Todd Youth and "A Little Death," and there was just some kind of different sonic to it and different energy. So sometimes songs aren't ready yet, or they're. They're not ready to be born at certain times, I found out. And I don't throw them away. I keep them around. Maybe they grow and they decide to come to life, or they don't.
You know what? I want to interrupt there, because I went to Al Green's church, and this was sometime back in the 90s. And Al Green came out, and, you know, the as he comes out, it's kind of this procession, and the choir is singing, and it's got this band that's rocking. And it comes to a stop, and then he started singing gospel number, and it was just all a cappella. And his, when I normally in the records, you know, he sings a real high register, but his range is really broad, and he was, and it was just stupefying. I mean, it was just like my jaw dropping, right? And when he finished that, he said, now that's a song that's got to simmer. You put that in the oven and let it cook a while. You don't microwave no song like that.
I like that.
Right? Yeah. That's what you're getting at. I mean, it's got to, you've got to percolate a little, got to cook a little and simmer. And
yeah. Yeah, totally. I feel that way. That song called Tall Black Horses on the record I wrote a long time ago, and we've tried it for different records, and it's just it never connected. But finally, at this record, Derek Cruz, my guitar player, who is one of the co-producers on the record, and he just said, you know, we're going to make this one happen this time. He did.
You know, I want to talk about some of the tracks specifically, but before we move too far from that, I do want to ask you about the title, because it's kind of cool. I mean, it's, my understanding, at least, is the album's title comes from that Jim Jarmusch movie, Down by Law, which I saw a long time ago. But when I read, you know, that's where the title comes from, I had to look up the scene again, because that part I don't remember, and I did find it. Why did that phrase resonate with you, and why did you choose that opposed to using a song title as the name of the album?
Well, I felt that it fit, you know, the songs on this record, but it was a title that I had in a little scribbled notebook I carry around with titles and ideas for years that I always just liked. You know, watching that film one night at home years later, I'd seen Down by Law in the theater. It's one of my favorites. And I was watching it on my couch, and when Roberto Benigni says that to Tom Waits,
right,
I took out my pen and paper, and I said, oh, that's good. I'm going to hold on to that. That, you know, that could be something there, a title or a line. And it actually ended up in a song called Oshina, which is on New York Before the War.
Right.
And it says, when it all goes down on a corner in a sad and beautiful world, it's a place in time, meaning, you know, right now, we're here, we're alive, like Ram Dass, be here now, you know. And it just, I'm a fan of taking a lyric that's in another song in a previous album and moving that forward. As a little kid, I liked Aerosmith, you know, and they had a record called Get Your Wings, and it was a song called Spaced, and it said, spaced in time, draw the line. And then they had two records later, or three records later, a record called Draw the Line. And I don't know. On my second record, The Heat, there's a song called Indian Summer, and I have a line, all the glitter in the gutter you can find, kind of a nod to the Oscar Wilde thing. And then my next record was called Glitter in the Gutter. It just was there, but I just liked it. It seemed to fit with the record. We had some other titles that I liked too, and it just seemed to work. So, you know, that's the story behind it with the
You mentioned, let me get to this before I forget. You mentioned, you know, Lucinda Williams and Tom Overby working with you, producing Sunset Kids and a couple of tracks that what was Backstabbers and the What We Used to Roll, kind of coming out of those sessions. So the new album, my reading the liner notes says your guitarist Derek Cruz and engineer Jeff Sanoff have received producer credits. But I'm wondering what things did you learn from Lucinda and Tom? And were any of those things present on the new album, either the roots rock side or, for that matter, the radical side?
Well, just to, you know, having Lucinda around lyrically, she would sit there and go through all the pages of my lyrics. And, you know, I'd write six verses to some songs like Room 13 or whatever. And she'd sit there, we'd sit in the kitchen or wherever, her kitchen or in the studio, and really go through each line and try to push harder to say, all right, how are you telling this story? How clear is this? You know, as an artist, you tend to want to take, you know, well, this is kind of abstract here, and we can just say anything, you know, and people have to interpret it. But she would really push me to tell the story directly. And so I thought about a lot of that, how we would go through my lyrics when I knew I had to bring them to Lou, the lyric doctor, and have her look at my words. And I would do that with Derek. I think he had noticed also what was going on. I'd sit down and with Rob, and I would run through, you know, tons of words that I have and read them off to people and sing them in the kitchen and or in the, you know, the lounge room for the studio. And just that kind of thing that I was doing with Lucinda and doing with the other guys, and just seeing how somebody you trust, how you reverberate that off their taste and their brain. And then with the Tom aspect, who was so musical, I mean, he had a good sense of when the takes were right, when the guitar playing was right. I just thought about them and Lucinda also, when it was the right tempo, when we got the right pocket, you know, she would just get up off the couch and just start dancing and moving her hips and moving around. And when she started moving around, we knew that was the take. And, you know, so I tried to just keep that spirit in there. You know, working with them, I can't explain the whole thing, how it worked, but the two of them together and in that record, we were able to strike what I felt was a lot of magic. And I think Derek and I and Jeff being around that, I think we definitely took some of that Lou and Tom Sunset Kids energy. But those cats, you know, Derek Cruz, my guitar player, he plays a million instruments and comes from a very musical family. And, you know, we do co-write on some songs too. And so we've been doing that for a while. And Jeff has been around, you know, the last couple records and really kind of, we have like a great shorthand kind of telepathic way of working. And me and him have worked together on and off since my second album. So It's just kind of a good crew in there, you know, to cook with.
Did you do that? Did you record it at Little Stevens studio in New York?
A lot of it was done mostly at a place called Flux, but some was done at Renegade and some was mixed there, which is a great spot, great board. But we were over at Flux, which is pretty much, you know, like a block away from my house. So, you know, during the COVID thing, I was able to like run over there and sneak in.
Wrap yourself up in cellophane.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Well, this week's coolest song in the world is Dance with the System. And it's off the radical side of the new album. A lot of different systems, you know, relationships, ecologies. When I listen to the song, I get the idea you're trying to figure out how to work the system, deal with it, not become a casualty. What are you intending?
Yeah, I think there's something about music has always been the real freedom and the liberation. It's like maybe it's a P-Funk George Clinton quote, like, you know, free your ass and your mind will follow. You know, there was just a lot of people really questioning the establishment, I think, in the last 2 years more than ever, and fighting back in that kind of way of like, we're going to take to the streets. And, you know, some was, I think, with great intentions, and some might have been violent and some might have been looting and this and that. But I think that these last 2 years really pressed up on a younger generation of feeling like, wow, they got to step up and realize that this kind of brutality, this kind of attack on people, on Black people, on Asian people, and people that are minorities, and that we're all in this together, but we're being, you know, it's a real thing. You can't just escape and just go dive into Snapchat or your phone. And so it was a nod to getting out there, but also that the fact that, you know, music and the community of people doing something and celebrating life, that is a way to fight back in a sense, because you need to be positive. You need to have joy. So,
you know, I love that explanation there. Need to be positive, need to have joy. There's a great, to the track, there's this great kind of sleaze to it. I don't know how to describe it better. Sort of rocking languidity to it. I mean, I think you should pitch it to the Rolling Stones. I don't think Mick Jagger could sing it as well as you, but I think he could do an okay job. What do you think?
Hey, they want to cover it, they can. Maybe we'll send it over through Steve Jordan's back door in there.
Well, you know, when I get together with Mick the next time we're hanging, you know.
All right. On the Flintstones, they were the rolling boulders. So when your feet touch the ground like Fred Flintstone, you can find the rolling boulders and, you know, that's it. Cary Grant may be making a movie.
That's right. It all comes back to the Flintstones. Oh, one other thing about the track that I really like is that you fade out on the hand claps.
Yeah, it's funny enough. And then it goes into the next song. This was not intentional to make this conversation about a hair band from the 70s, but it was a trick that I had heard on an Aerosmith record on a song called Sick as a Dog on Rocks, Jack Douglas produced. It's the first song on side two, and it fades down and the claps go up and get louder, and then it cuts into the next song. And I just thought that. So somewhere between The Stooges No Fun and this Jack Douglas Aerosmith Sick as a Dog came that idea, and then it goes right into the last track, St. Christopher, which is one of my faves.
Right, and closes out the album. Holly Ramos, she contributed several songs to the album, including, you already mentioned, Greener Pastures, but I think she also contributes to Almost Criminal and The Way We Used to Roll. We talked about that briefly. And I mentioned that because I want to find out more about her. I mean, it turns out she lives here in L.A., and I just happened to, over the course of walking my dog, meet her husband in the neighborhood, and then he said, oh, she's a singer-songwriter. And then, you know, this is over the course of weeks and months. And then another time, she works with Jesse Malin sometimes. And of course, my jaw dropped open, you know, small world thing, because I live here on the side of Mount Washington in LA. And it's not like this is some celebrity magnet or anything. You know, it's just regular people, you know, living out here. So that was sort of bizarre that she was literally, you know, right around the corner from me. How do you know her? And yeah, well, how do you know her? And how did she start working with you?
Well, Holly Ramos is originally from New York. We met in Mount Vernon at a place called the Left Bank, a club, when I was 15 and she was 16. And it was at a Black Flag, Saccharine Truss, Angelic Upstart show, essentially a Black Flag gig. And we were both into punk rock, hardcore, and we started dating for about 5 years, like my first major relationship. And we've been friends since. We've gone through so many different things, started the legendary Green Door NYC party in New York, which was an underground dance party, you know, and she made a band called Fur, and I made a band called Degeneration, and we played on bills together, and I've done lots of different projects over the years. And you know, we broke up, I guess, you know, by the time we were 19 or 20, but somehow we're able to stay together creatively. She even wrote some lyrics for my old band Heart Attack on the third record. We did three records, that hardcore band, when I was a teen. And then around my first album or so, I guess, we started to write a song called Cigarettes and Violets together, which was on Fine Art of Self-Destruction. And then I think pretty much on every record that I've made, there's been a song or two that we've gotten together and made it a thing to write. I think that we both have a similar understanding where we come from and aesthetic and view of the world. I feel like that there's we both grew up with loving the lyrics of Joe Strummer and Bernie Taupin and other things from Bob Dylan and whatever, Billy Bragg. And so I think there's a sensibility that's very connected, but also she has her own thing, and it's a great way with words. She's in a group called Oh So My Brain, which just put out a single not too long ago called Better Days. Better Now, sorry. She says, Oh So My Brain song is Better Now, and she still performs. But yeah, usually when I'd come to Los Angeles, you know, if I was on tour or if I had a break, We said, let's get together. You know, I got these songs. Let's hear. I have this title, Chemical Heart. Let's work on this here. And she's just got a great eye. We did. It's a lot of stuff over the years. I'm always. It's like a fun thing that we do. And sometimes these songs make the record. And this one has a few that are they're just great. She's got a really, really good brain.
There's one that she wrote. Maybe it was a recent B-side, but it's got a very Don Covey, Sam Cooke kind of vibe to it that you guys wrote together. I can't think.
Oh, yeah, Time Robber. Yeah, it was like Have Mercy kind of Don Covey. Yeah. Sam Cooke thing. Yeah, that's fun.
That's a great one. I don't know if we played that when I spoke with Derek or remind me, what is your, maybe I can look it up real quick. The, Rob Claris. I think maybe we played that when I was talking with your piano man, keyboard man, Rob.
It's the B-side of The Way We Used to Roll, which is on this record. You know, a couple of the singles came out before the album, which had just come out because they were scheduled anyway. And with COVID and stuff, we figured, oh, let's keep the schedule going of these singles, even though the album's not finished. It was kind of a weird thing. So that was the other catalyst for like why it should be a double, is that a few of these singles had been out. So for the hardcore fans, I wanted to make sure that they had enough songs to sink their teeth into that it hadn't been out, you know. So it's something for everybody. But
we mentioned this, the album ends with Saint Christopher, and the track before that is our coolest song in the world this week, Dance with the System. I wanted to ask you as well about that cut, A Little Death. It's got kind of this the hi-hat sort of disco thing going on. When we hear the phrase, I think of, you know, that French expression La Petite Mort, that, you know, I guess generally is thought of meaning in an orgasm, but that's one of its meanings. How do you mean a little death?
Exactly. I mean, that was kind of felt like that was the thing, like just a fast, quick thrill, and then, you know, then it's over. And this song is about an entitled, you know, millennial, a person I noticed coming to New York and thinking they're gonna, you know, make it all happen and go on this. They get on this real self-destructive path, coming here with their parents' money and coming into town and being the coolest kid. And there's always that. I mean, we've all kind of done that maybe at some point in different ways, but there's a new kind of entitlement, and people go down in flames a lot quicker without really a lot of style anymore, I notice. And so it's just about one of these kind of people. But in the end, the person finds love and actually redeems themselves, and the person's actually doing it right now. But so it just felt like it was, for me, a snapshot of a type of kid that I was watching in these times, this generation, and how they operated and danced through their little world. So, and I thought, you know, that was one of the lines we had, A Little Death, because initially it was called Nikki Disco, which was the program that we wrote it on, the drum program. So for years, like the whole year kept going, put up Nikki Disco, let's do a little overdubbing on that. But it already has a disco feel, and I didn't want to spotlight it and tell people it was disco, because then they'll go, oh, that disco song. Because it already has a bit of a nod to Heart of Glass by Blondie, and which is a song I always love. But yeah, you got it right. The French, A Little Death. So, you know, it's a fast shot and or whatever, and you get that thrill, and then where do you go from there?
Well, what I love about your explanation here is that, you know, and it's a type of person, so it's a composite, but the one specific person, there was a specific person, and it, in the end, it was an okay turnout, right?
Yeah.
Which, no, okay, well, that's good.
This person actually met somebody and had kids, and I don't know, you know, hopefully get a new lease in life, you know?
Right. So you're in the UK doing shows now. I've had some stateside gigs so far. I mentioned the Stone Pony. We talked about this live stream stuff. I was looking at your fall schedule, lots of shows overseas. I think your next stateside gig is Friday, October the 22nd in Hamden, Connecticut, and Saturday, October the 23rd in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Those are several weeks away. Do either of those qualify as the official release party?
Yeah, the one in New York's in Brooklyn, you know, back in Brooklyn where I used to live, it's like 15 minutes from New York, from Manhattan. Brooklyn Made, new club that Jeff Tweedy of Wilco is doing the first couple nights at. It's a great, really artist-friendly space in Bushwick. And yeah, that's going to be our big like record party for this album. On the bill is a lot of people that worked on the record and guessed it. HR from Bad Brains is going to join us on the song he sang on. And Tommy Stinson is going to join us, and Catherine Popper, and the group Hollis Brown is opening up, which is one of my favorite newish New York bands. Got a kind of a rock and roll roots thing.
But yeah, they're a favorite here in the Underground Garage. Hollis Brown.
Yeah,
I did some Bo Diddley song. Some guy that represented Bo Diddley's music catalog approached them at a show and said, "Hey, Bo had this unfinished track, just literally like a rhythm guitar part. You guys want to turn it into a song?" And they did.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of a great story, and it worked. It worked out. Oh man, yeah.
And that's the show in Brooklyn on the 23rd.
Yeah, and he has a couple other guests on that, but we're going to play, you know, kind of our full set, and that's the 23rd. That'll be the party. And then we go back over to Europe again proper. We go into, like, Scandinavia and France and Netherlands and Germany, that kind of stuff. And then we come back again. I mean, you know, we're in these times, you're going, and you just hope that each show happens. And so far, knock wood, we've been lucky, and it's going to keep trailblazing through and being safe and smart and kind of staying in our bubble, which is not always ideal, but it's really what's needed right now. And so we're fortunate and grateful enough to be able to get up and play music. When you put a record out, like I said earlier, you know, you work so hard on it, but that's great, and that's a fun process. But to me, the reward is getting to play in front of people and sweating it a little bit, get it a little dirty, living these songs.
Right, you got to raise the body temperature, and that's a way to ward off illness too. You know, I got to raise that body temperature.
Yeah,
yeah. So when we were talking about Holly, you mentioned the heart attacks? That was like a punk rock thing you had early on, right?
Heart attack. Yeah,
heart attack
came out 40 years ago. God is Dead, and it's actually coming out a reissue of it because it was kind of a rare record. I think it's the first New York hardcore single. 1981 on Damaged Goods label. But that EP is coming out October 22nd, a reissue of that, just marking the 40 years since the first record I ever put out. I was in junior high school. And that was Heart Attack did three records. And I had that band from when I was 12 to 16. And then by the time, I guess, the mid-80s came, I felt that the hardcore scene, as much as I still love a lot of the bands, I felt it became too macho and too metal.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. So
you've been my young man, you've been dancing with the music system for a long time.
Yeah, it's been dancing on me, and I've been dancing, kicking back.
Well, one of your bandmates, dance mates, dance partners, let's say, one of your dance partners over the course of your music career, Howie Pyro, right? He was in D-Generation with you.
Absolutely.
And back in the 90s, you guys reformed in 2011. Recently, it was revealed that he's in need of a liver transplant. Can you tell us about Howie and how folks can help him out?
Well, Howie Pyro is, you know, one of the, I don't know, architects of the New York punk scene, and lived in LA a lot too. He's played with Glenn Danzig, and he played with D-Generation and The Blessed in the 70s. He's also have his own radio show, Intoxica Radio. He also pretty much DJs at all kinds of events with Jonathan Tobin, Garage Things. He wrote a book for Big Daddy Roth, Rat Bank, his biography. Guys like this done all these wonderful things over the years. And he got sick, and it happened during COVID, which is, I think, a lot of people being isolated and being down and depressed and not working. I think it created certain things to rise up to the surface on some people. Really sadly, he's one of my best friends. He's touched so many people's lives. We were roommates. Like I said, we formed D-Generation together. He needs a liver, and there's a GoFundMe for Howie Pyro. You just go to GoFundMe, whatever, on the internet.com or something, and you can donate whatever, or just share the link around. That really, really helps. You know, you can look Howie up and see everything he's done. I can't even remember to list it all now on the spot, but there's a lot of love for him, and he's going to get through. He's had 9 lives already, or 90. Maybe we'll pull that trick out of the hat.
That's right. A cool cat like that has at least 9 lives.
Yeah. So we're trying to figure that out. So that people have been really generous and spreading the word and donating. Just, I know it means a lot, not even the money to somebody when they're ill, but to see the love and the support that people have. And hopefully, you know, I know he's going to get to the other side of this. So.
Well, our coolest song is Dance with the System. We talked about that, and that's part of the radical side of A Sad and Beautiful World. So we need to go out with a sample from the other side, right? From the roots rock side. And I want us to go out on Dance on My Grave. Now, is that one that you wrote by yourself, or was somebody else contributing?
Yeah, that one I wrote, there was no one here to contribute at that time. No one's allowed now. my song, yeah, there's no co-writes on that one. It was the chords might have started a little while back, but it all came together right in this, when I was home in my kitchen locked in there doing it. So I'd been through a breakup right before pandemic, and it was a little tongue-in-cheek about, Dance on My Grave. You can, look back and say, all right, this was a real mess, whatever. I messed up.
I also had a relationship broke up right as the pandemic set in. And it was kind of like, well, it was just as well. We wouldn't have been able to see each other anyway, kind of thing. That was a long distance.
Yeah, some marriages ended. Some people had kids and got married. Things just, it did different things to different people. And this regulation, I don't know, this kind of leveling of the thing that it did, but brought things up. And all my songs are usually about real people, real situations. Even sometimes it might be a couple people, but this song is directly about, one person, one relationship. Yeah, it's one of the ones we don't play lately in the set. As the tours go on, we kind of slip in some of the stuff from the new record slowly, because I've never been a fan of when you go see a band you like and it is placed so much of the new record and you want to hear the ones you know. So I'm careful, but I'm excited to pull this one out live soon. Like, we kind of run them at soundcheck and then ease into it. But there's just been too many shows where I've seen people go, here's a new one. And you're like, cool. And then they go, here's another new one. And you're like, okay. And I know you're excited about your new record. There's always the artist that thinks, their new record is always their best. And I can never tell any of that stuff till, time goes on a little bit, because you always like your new stuff. So I never want to be like, this is our best record since Destroyer, back to form,
Yes, I've seen plenty of artists make that announcement. And you're like, it's always suspect, were you telling me that everything else before wasn't good? It's like you walk off stage and you personally may have thought, that really wasn't my best. There's some stuff going on. And but you overcame it. You gave your best performance, but intuitively it was as good as it could have been in that moment, but it wasn't the absolute best. And then lo and behold, you have far more people come up to you than ever saying, that was the greatest show you've ever done. But if you feel like, oh my God, I'm on top of my game, this was the most brilliant thing I've ever done. Everything in my mind clicked right. The audience was great and the band played great and my own personal performance was great. Nobody says anything to you. It's like, wait a minute, now we need the valid. Now I need the, I need to hear it, because I did give you the best, right? But so when someone comes, you feel like it's not the best. Someone comes up to you and says it is the best. You can't tell them it wasn't the best, because for them it was, right?
You got to shut your mouth. You got to learn to go, yeah, because that's how they saw it. Instead of telling them, oh, I don't know. Yeah. You got to go, okay, cool, great. Take it. Thank
right,
you.
right. Oh, Jesse, we're going to have to wrap things up now. I'm sorry. But thanks so much again for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
I miss you, Manfred. It's good to hear your voice, and I hope to see you at a show or play together soon. And
well, thanks for all you do. Hey, you know what? We're going to do one of those things, and the next time you're out here visiting Holly, just walk around the corner. Walk around the corner.
I'll shout your name.
5 times, and I will appear.
All right.
I will appear with joy and love, and not malice and evilness.
I love it. I know that. All right, brother. Be well.
All right. We're going to give a listen now to Dance on My Grave off of Sad and Beautiful World. It's Jesse Malin and Little Stevens, Underground Garage.
Well, I know you don't need me, but I'm living just the same. And I didn't get the message anyway. You said you don't believe in nothing since the day that you were born. Well, I'm
just heard some of Dance on My Grave from Jesse Malin here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Track is off the new album Sad and Beautiful World out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Jesse for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. And thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Our next Coolest Conversations will feature Joy Deo from the Long Beach, California band Sweet Nobody. Their latest full-length is titled We're Trying Our Best, and it features a recent coolest song in the world, Five Star Diary. We'll find out all about the band and the new album on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. If you turn around, I won't let you down.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Told it to five, baby, diamond ring.